Charles Ortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness. Pleased to have Luke. Are you out there someplace in Mitchell?
Bill, I am. I should have known better, but at least I made it to Mitchell.
Well, we've got quite the group that we're talking to today. Senator Rounds, who is going to be our lead guest, is our closing guest just before Scott Munt at the end. And we're going to talk all about all this stuff that's going on in D.C. You got your bags ready? You're ready to get the guns out and be firing this morning?
Yeah, you bet. We're always ready to go, rearing to go.
All right. I got to make sure that we do this right for Carla. We're pleased to have Luke here, but you can listen live or even go to the podcast on South Dakota Farmers Union website or our own Kello AM website, but we have to make it official. Welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Ag Business Report. South Dakota Farmers Union, uniting farmers, ranchers, and rural communities to strengthen South Dakota Farmers Union. Luke, we've worked really hard to put the show together. Shall we get right into it?
Absolutely. We got a really good show lined up for today. We had a little change with Senator Rounds. He'll be coming on later on in the episode, but he was just elected to his second term in D.C. and kind of a busy time in D.C. So we're really excited to hear what he has to say, and we're happy he could make some time to join us. So
he's at 10:45, and we're going to start with a congressman.
Absolutely. Congressman Dusty Johnson is going to be joining us as well. Big changes in the Ag Committee on the House side. So, he'll kind of enlighten us on the situation in the House.
Let's get rolling. Congressman Dusty Johnson joins us this morning. You're on your way to Aberdeen as we're doing our South Dakota Farmers Union show. Strange times in D.C. How do you interpret it all?
Well, clearly a lot of the experts thought there was going to be a big blue wave, and a lot of that did not materialize. I mean, the reality is the Republicans gained some seats in the House, but, Speaker Pelosi is and her party are still going to be in charge of the House. We had a number of people, as you and I talked about last week, some key agricultural allies on the Democratic side who lost their seats, like a Colin Peterson in Minnesota. So there's going to be a new chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. And so, how do you make sense of it all? It's been a little hard, Zortman. Honestly, there's so many different moving pieces. There's going to be new leadership on both the Republican and the Democratic side on the House Ag Committee. So I'm just trying to figure out, who's going to be holding the gavel and who's going to be sitting next to them.
What should we do as South Dakota? And we've got a governor that has been involved. We've got you. We've got two senators. Shouldn't we be encouraging the president to move things forward? Are we going to be in an awkward position if we ever get to January?
Well, I think this is going to get resolved relatively quickly. The president's team made legal filings yesterday, and I think the guy's got a legal right to be able to, prosecute his case. I have not reviewed all the legal filings yet. I have reviewed the ones that he made in Arizona. And, I think courts understand how important it is to get some certainty around these election results sooner rather than later. And so I think you'll see relatively quick decisions. And listen, as a country, once it's clear that the legal challenges are what they are, we're gonna come together. If it is indeed a president-elect Biden, I think this country is going to understand the peaceful transition of power. That's how we do things in America.
And that transfer of power is what has some people concerned today. They start talking about the magic box and all the things that are there, but you're comfortable.
Well, I know, people are, their anxiety level is high. It's been high throughout 2020. But there's really, the president and his team have said, again, that there is going to be a peaceful transition of power. Peaceful transfer of power. And so, I think we got to take them at their word. I do think they have a right to make their legal filings, but at some point, if they are not able to triumph in court, they are absolutely going to make way for Joe Biden.
Healthcare costs, a big concern regardless of who's in the White House.
Well, absolutely, and particularly when we talk about, ag producers, they don't have an employer who's paying half or three quarters of the cost. All of that is coming on their backs, and as much as of, you know, anything, that's what ag producers talk to me about things that keep them up at night, things that make them nervous. And it is going to be hard in the next Congress to substantially move that number. You know, in part, Americans are not super healthy. I mean, sometimes people want to compare us to Sweden. Well, the reality is Sweden, they take a lot better care of themselves. 70% of Americans are overweight. Half of those are obese. 103 million of us have high cholesterol. 102 million of us have high blood pressure. And that is not going to be the kind of thing that government is going to, at least a government that's the size that I want it, or most Americans want it, is going to fix overnight. At some point, we got to do a better job, all of us. And when it comes to things like prescription drug prices, where we are paying clearly too much and clearly more than the other countries of the world, there I do think there's a governmental role in making sure that the marketplace is not as unfair as it is to this country.
We do hope we're going to have a magic potion that's going to help us, and there was some news on that yesterday, but we have to be concerned about the COVID numbers right now. It didn't go away.
Well, that's right. And, you know, in South Dakota, our numbers aren't where we want them either. And, you know, we have a tendency to focus on the beds, and I think that's appropriate. I mean, we certainly do not want to run out of hospital beds. Increasingly, though, I'm hearing from healthcare workers and healthcare administrators that, you know, they're exhausted. And the nurses and the advanced practice professionals that are being required to take an extra shift or two every week, some of them are volunteering for more because they're needed. They're getting worn down. And that is, I don't know how you measure that, Zortman, but to me, that is a key indicator of straining capacity that we probably should pay more attention to. I mean, we may well run out of healthcare workers long before we run out of healthcare beds. And we just, you know, to the extent any of us, all of us, can make better decisions to try to ease the strain on those people, we really should.
One thing that we're telling people, hug your kids, hug your wife. They're important to us. We need to treat them that way, too.
Well, that's right. And I, you know, it's not just about saying thank you. I mean, listen, that's good. That's good so far as it goes. But, you know, if you're going into a crowded area and you're not wearing a mask, I mean, I think your actions are speaking louder than your words. I mean, we know what works. You know, we had the Surgeon General. I mean, that's a guy who works for, you know, President Trump. He's a guy who cares about facts. And the Surgeon General was in South Dakota yesterday, and he reminded all of us about the three W's. We got to wash our hands. We got to watch our distance. And if we can't watch our distance, we got to be able to wear a mask. And I know a lot of us aren't comfortable doing that. But saying thank you to a healthcare worker and then walking into a crowded indoor spot without a mask on, I just think I don't know how much your thank you at that point is worth.
And today it's Veterans Day. We need to be thanking them as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you think about how much people have given. And we have a tendency to focus on those who have fallen in the defense of our country, as well we should. But even for those who, you know, didn't give the ultimate sacrifice, even for those who didn't serve in a theater of war, even for those who may not have felt in any particular moment that their lives were in danger, it is still a sacrifice to be, you know, sent away. I mean, so many National Guardsmen have been sent away for, you know, 8 or 10 or 14 months at a time away from family. And you're just never going to get that birthday celebration for your six-year-old back. You're just always going to remember that you weren't there for the birth of a daughter or a son. That's a sacrifice, too. And so really, for anybody who served in uniform, my hat's off to you. We're a better country because of you.
Congressman Johnson, appreciate it. Tell him hello for us in Aberdeen.
Sounds good. Thanks, Zortman. Bye.
Luke, he kind of put it right to us. The challenges will pass. Expect Biden in the White House. So that's where he's coming. And we'll have a chance to talk with Senator Rounds a little bit later in the hour. We'll ask him some of the same questions, even some questions about beef. Your thoughts this morning as you're over in Mitchell.
Well, I think, you know, the big thing to keep in mind is unity in our country. We need to make sure that we can put specific agendas aside to come together for a common goal. I mean, I think that's what it all really boils down to, whether it's the national level or the state level.
All right, let's see if we can connect with the president of the National Farmers Union in D.C. Rob LaRue is with me this morning. Rob, I remember you from North Dakota, and what were you getting water for somebody? Now you're president? How does this all happen?
I tell you, I'm still getting water for folks whenever it's needed. But no, I was lucky enough to be elected and trusted with the National Farmers Union reins here back in March. And I tell you, I think it was just 1 week after that convention that the world really shifted pretty dramatically. So it's been an interesting several months here for sure.
Here's what I would ask you, because I saw a release from one of the gentlemen that heads up the National Farm Bureau that was congratulating Biden, congratulating all that went with it. Have you guys done that too?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, anyone representing farmers or agriculture right now knows that there are still a lot of challenges out there. And it's important to make sure that we're engaging with the next administration as they begin their transition, which starts this week. And, you know, as so that we can have as smooth a transition as possible at USDA, at APA, and all the agencies that are really going to impact farmers here for the next several years.
So, whether it's Farm Bureau or Farmers Union, is there a way we can all come together, help the farmers in the next 4 years?
Boy, it's not just farmers, right? The whole country would be a lot better off if we could find a way to get a lot more bipartisanship and coming together. And I think that's what we're hopeful for. We'll have to wait and see exactly what a President Biden brings to us. But I do think it's hopefully a positive thing that he has spent several years in the Senate. Knows several of the members there, understands what it means to work across the aisle and get things done, because it's going to take that to get things moving in the right direction.
All right. If you had 5 minutes with President-elect Biden and you could tell him what North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa need for the next 4 years, what would you tell him in 2 minutes?
First thing, farmers need a seat at the table. Whether we are talking about increasing the demand and the access to biofuels, whether it's talking about environmental regulations and addressing the effects of climate change and having farmers there, whether it's talking about making sure that markets are working so that farmers can get a fair price out of the marketplace rather than payments. All of these things are really going to make sure that folks who really understand agriculture, primarily farmers, have a seat at the table in all of these discussions.
So how friendly are you with other farm organizations?
We have to be very friendly. We have to work really closely with all of the organizations out there, certainly the Farm Bureau, all the commodity groups, folks who have particular conservation bent. You know, it is a small community. And while we do have our differences in certain areas and so forth, the fact is that I think without exception, we're all looking for a brighter, more prosperous future for farmers and for rural communities.
Are you hopeful?
Well, maybe insanely so. Some days it doesn't seem like there's a lot to be hopeful for, but I tell you what. You know, we just went through an election cycle here. It can always be a little nerve-wracking in many ways. What does the future hold? Certainly in agriculture, there's a lot of questions. But I think there's a keen understanding of what the problems are and what it would take to fix them. And we're well-positioned to make that happen. So I am hopeful.
You are kind of the next generation of the National Farmers Union. And when we look at that, we're concerned about our next generation of farmers. What would you say to those young people out there that are saying, I want to make sure that there is something for me there when I become of age?
Yeah, I think what I would do first is listen to those that next generation. And that next generation right now is saying, you know, where is the future? How can we get stronger prices? How can we increase the margins in agriculture so that it is a viable occupation here? There's the love, there's the passion, there's the care for the land and the animals and so forth. All of that is there, and folks want to do it.
Right now, what we need to be working on is making sure that agriculture does have that bright future, that we can make sure that, as I mentioned before, that markets are truly working, and that we can get a handle on costs, and that that margin can increase so that there is a bright future. And I think if we line those things up, then we don't have anything to worry about, because the next generation, those folks wanting to get into farming, are going to be right there ready to get the work going.
All right, so we've solved the next generation. We've solved Farmers Union and Farm Bureau together. How about those in Congress? How do we get them to be on the same page and help us all?
I certainly hope one of the messages that came out of this election is the fact that there is a lot of division still out there, right? When you look at the way that the presidential race broke, when you look at a lot of the other seats, and the House got a little bit closer, the Senate is insanely close right now. I hope what that means is that we can return to a time and space where there is more of a moderate voice, and that there is a middle, and that Democrats and Republicans can find a way, maybe not on every issue, but find those issues where there is common ground and work towards bipartisanship. We certainly will be calling for that because, you know, particularly in agriculture, we can't do it alone with one party or the other. We have to have folks working together.
All right, I'm going to challenge you. You ready?
Absolutely.
I want to hear from you once a quarter for the next year, and we'll talk about where we're at. Will you take time to do that with us?
Absolutely. I would take any time there. I appreciate the opportunity here because it's important to get this word out and hear what's important on the ground.
President Rob LaRue, that just sounds you. So let's make sure that you keep sounding that way the next four times I talk to you.
Fair enough. I look forward to it.
Thank you. Appreciate you. All right. We've talked D.C. We've talked in Aberdeen. Mitch Richter's going to join us as we talk about what's going on in Pierre and fewer Democrats than the Eisenhower days back in 1953. Luke will join us as we talk to Mitch about the legislature in 2021.
What does your small business want from a healthcare plan in these changing times? You want employees to have access to the largest network of doctors. You want flexible plans to fit your needs and your budget. But mostly, you want peace of mind, knowing your employees and company will be taken care of. It's why 8 out of 10 small businesses choose Wellmark Blue Cross and Blue Shield. See how we can help you take control. Find your best plan at wellmark.com/business.
Listen to local discussions, news, and interviews you may have missed. Check out the podcast section at Kello.com. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
South Dakota Farmers Union Show. Luke, you still over in Mitchell? You lost Luke?
Yeah, apparently that didn't work, but I do have...
You have Mitch.
Yes, I do have Mitch ready to go.
And Luke's calling in. He knows he's lost his time here. But Mitch,
It's been a while, Bill. You're going to have to deal with me a little bit here. I'm sorry.
Mitch Richter, lobbyist in Pierre. Do they have a lot of lobbyists that are Democratic tied?
Well, there's a few, but not a lot, I can tell you that much.
So, as we look at the kind of numbers, and we talked with Michael Saba in our show yesterday, he's one of those that didn't get reelected. What's it going to be like in Pierre for the coming year?
Well, you're going to see the Democrats really have to coalesce and be behind the issue on their own, and then they're going to have to build some coalitions with the Republicans. Hopefully, compromise does not become a real dirty word in Pierre this year. And you can see some things get done that way. There are, there's different factions of the Republican Party. There's moderates and there's conservatives. And on any given day, you can get some of them to go with your idea, depending on what it is. But it's going to be an interesting session when they only have 8 Democrats in the House and 3 in the Senate. Heck, they don't even have enough senators to cover all the committees. So that's going to be a challenge for them. It's going to be an interesting session.
So I've been in states and worked in states that were like that. Texas was like that before they found a Republican governor in 1976. It was a one-party state. I mean, if you got elected in the primary as a Democrat, you were elected in November. That's not healthy for a state.
Well, we really would like to see a little more balance in South Dakota. The Republicans end up arguing with themselves more than they do their opposition because there's so many of them and they're such a diverse group. And the only way that's going to happen is if we make sure that everybody's message is heard. Whether you're a Democrat, independent, or Republican, you need to work to get your message out. And the independents in South Dakota, that number is growing. I think they're disenfranchised with both the traditional Democrat and Republican parties, and people are signing up as independents. And so, and you're seeing more of those independents start to run for the legislature. So we need to continue to have discussions around what the major issues are, and people really need to educate themselves before they vote. A lot of that is a voter that doesn't research issues, doesn't research candidates, and they end up voting their party, and that isn't always necessarily healthy.
The amendments, any surprise to you?
You know, not really. I kind of thought that marijuana was going to pass six months ago, recreational at least. I thought medical was a done deal. I wasn't sure about recreational, but they did pass it. It's in the Constitution, and so the Department of Revenue will have to write the rules, and got about 15-16 months for that to happen, and it's going to be interesting times because South Dakota was the first state to pass both medical and recreational at the same time, and so it's kind of a brand new frontier. They get to write the rules as they see fit, and it's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
I guess I could put all the Democrats in my car and we could talk about the priorities for the coming session, or I just ask you, what should they be?
Well, I think the marijuana, of course, is going to be an issue. They may want to go in and tinker with the medical initiative that was passed. And then, of course, there will probably be some changes for recreational in the current statutes. Budget will always be a big issue. Right now, we are ahead of the budget projections by about $24 million for the current year. So those worries about the pandemic affecting the budget have not come to fruition yet. Of course, we have a big month coming up in December. It's always big what happens with the Christmas shopping and those types of things. But we're currently ahead of the budget, which I think is kind of surprising to many people. You see early on where restaurants and some of those entertainment venues, their sales tax took a big hit. But home improvement stores really picked up the pace. You know, the Lowe's, the big box stores, people did home improvement projects and spent their money. And so that tax revenue continued to come in. So I think marijuana budget will be big issues. And I hope that we don't see a lot of bills because it's yet to be determined how the session is going to be held. Is it going to be a digital session, or is it going to be kind of a combination? The Executive Board of the Legislature meets next week, and I'm sure they're going to have that as a discussion topic on how we're going to move forward in January.
Mitch, thanks for the visit. We'll talk again next month.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Luke, are you back with us in Mitchell?
Bill, I'm here.
All right. Had a nice conversation with Mitch and the National Farmers Union president. And you're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming virtual convention in our next segment.
Yes. December 9th, we are having our virtual state convention. Just due to COVID-19, of course, we're trying to keep everybody safe. So we're going virtual again. We're going to have a great speaker. Tom Daschle is going to be on to kind of talk about some current concerns, and he always just delivers such a good message. So we're excited to have him December 9th.
All right, we got a world champion in two categories from South Dakota. We'll talk that. We'll also talk as well about the stock growers and the farm family, along with Senator Rounds, live from D.C.
Dakota Farmers Union cares about your safety. This harvest season, we ask you to be on the lookout for large, slow-moving farm equipment. Keep a safe distance between you and any farm equipment and allow ample time and distance for them to make wide turns. Please slow down and pass with caution. Just because you see the equipment does not mean they can see you. These are the people who are planting the food for your table, and we want everyone to make it home for supper. For more information on sharing the road with our farmers, check out sdfu.org. And for those of you who work in acres, not hours, we thank you.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at Kello.com. From the Kello.com News Center, this is your Kello Agribusiness Report.
With your Ag News, I'm Farm and Ranch Director Sarah Heinrich. Sales of U.S. soy to China have slowed down from a previously rapid pace. Reuters says the slowdown is raising questions of whether China is just pausing its purchases or if most of the intended volume has been purchased and Chinese buyers are waiting for Brazil's new supply to become available. Surging soybean sales to China is helping the overall level of farm trade to the Asian nations set new records for this time of year, while at the same time bridging China closer to meeting the purchase requirements in the Phase 1 trade deal with the U.S. Net export sales of U.S. soybeans to China during the week ending October 29th totaled more than 810,000 metric tons, which is the lowest total in the last 11 weeks of the current marketing year. That volume included 578,600 tons switched from unknown destinations. There hasn't been a daily U.S. soybean sale explicitly to China since October 15th, the longest streak since April of this year. U.S. soybean prices have risen significantly over the last 2 months, which may be a limiting factor in further sales at the end of 2020. And we'll be back with more Ag News right after this. Hi, Sarah Heinrich here. My friends at the Steffes Group have the following upcoming timed online auctions in western North Dakota. The Seaburg Farm and Ranch Retirement Auction near Rame, North Dakota. Bidding begins Friday, November 6th at 8 a.m. and closes Tuesday, November 17th at 10 a.m. The premier Seaburg Bowman Farm and Ranch Land Auction featuring 4,137 plus acres near Rame. Bidding begins Wednesday, November 11th at 8 a.m. and closes Wednesday, November 18th at noon. For a complete list for this auction, go to SteffesGroup.com. Go with Steffes. They're the best. The American Soybean Association and the Plains Cotton Growers have filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency registration of the herbicide dicamba. The product is used for over-the-top applications on soybean and cotton crops, genetically engineered to withstand the herbicide. A Feedstuff magazine report says the recent decision by the EPA gives growers 5 years of usage beginning with the 2021 growing season. However, the lawsuit says that some aspects of the registration decision, such as buffer requirements and application cutoffs, are problematic for growers who depend on reasonable and consistent access to dicamba for use on dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton. The lawsuit challenges the conditions as going beyond EPA's authority under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. With your Ag News, I'm Farm and Ranch Director Sarah Heinrich.
Snow in the forecast today. We're expecting an increase in accumulations as the activity moves in from northeast Nebraska. High temperature 32 with a northwest wind 10 to 20. With that winter weather advisory, we expect 3 to 6 inches by the end of the day. Low tonight near 20, partly cloudy. Tomorrow's high 39. That's your weather update from the Storm Center at Kettleland TV. I'm meteorologist Brian Karstens.
When the Sioux Empire needs to know, Kello is here 24 hours a day. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9, and Kello.com.
With South Dakota Farmers Union's Luke Rendell, I'm Bill Zortman, host of It's Your Business. You can visit the SDFU website at sdfu.org. It has information about sharing this month's podcast. Our next stop, Kimball. Time to talk about the farm family of the month. James, how do you say that last name so I get it right once?
Konechny.
And Kimball is the home, correct?
Yep.
Tell us about your Red Barn Lodge. That and some of the things that make you guys so special in South Dakota.
Well, the Red Barn is an old barn, a hip roof barn that my brother moved in and from, I guess, 3 miles away, and he remodeled it and made it into a pretty nice lodge, and it's been remodeled once since he originally put it there, but it is not your typical barn when you walk inside.
One of the things that you guys have done is really working on the habitat. Habitat for the pheasants. The family's been implementing conservation practices, the no-till farming, all of these things that are pretty important. Tell us why you guys go that direction.
Well, the no-till farming is just an absolute perfect fit for us, I think. In South Dakota, is normally a little dry. So the no-till saves some moisture, which we kind of need every year in this country. And it's increased our corn yields. Matter of fact, we just combined a field a couple days ago that made 222 bushel an acre. And that is kind of unheard of in Brule County, South Dakota.
The other thing you do, we don't have many crops that we do in South Dakota, but I notice that you got rye and alfalfa and oats, forage, sorghum. You guys have almost as much as folks in North Dakota.
Yeah. Well, we use a lot of those products because they go to feed. We have a large feedlot, and the oats and the rye and the alfalfa basically all go into our feedlot to use there. All of our crops go into our feedlot. We hardly market any crops as cash crops. It all goes through cattle.
You know, you guys have become very well known for being big into agriculture, big into family, family mattering. How do you guys pass the torch from generation to generation and still smile at each other?
Well, there's some days it gets a little tough. You just have to work your problems out and know that tomorrow's going to be a better day.
Well, I can tell that you have worked it through. And how many generations are we talking about?
Right now, we're just on the third. My grandchildren will be the fourth generation coming in, and they've started working quite a bit on the farm. And I know that my dad is smiling down, looking at him, thinking, this is great.
So, Kimball, for those that don't know, and I had somebody say, where's Kimball, South Dakota? We got people move in all the time, James. So what would you tell them about what is special at Kimball?
Well, it's just a nice little friendly hometown. It's right on the interstate, so it's easy access in the middle of the state. And I guess with all the things that are going on in our country right now, it seems like a real good place to live.
You mentioned your dad. He saved up $100 to purchase farm, did some handpicking of corn in Minnesota. Lots of things to get where you guys are today. And it sounds to me like you guys still appreciate how they got started.
Oh, yes, very much. Yeah, my dad worked real hard to get things to where they are now. And I hate to see him change.
How do we keep them from changing?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. We just have to hope and pray that our country keeps going the right direction so that we can keep going the right direction.
A lot of people think it's all in towns like Sioux Falls or Omaha or Des Moines, but to me, what happens in Kimball is just as important as what happens in Sioux Falls.
Oh, I think probably more important. Without us farmers, the country'd be in pretty tough shape. It'd be kind of hard to find a burger to eat or anything like that if we didn't produce it. So,
do you think people understand that, or do they just think that they can get an impossible burger without meat today and that's good enough?
I think that's kind of where we're heading with too much of it. I'm afraid that things like that aren't taught in school, where our food comes from and how we get it. People just don't understand. Yeah, they think they can go to the grocery store and get it, pick it off the shelf, but that's not exactly the case. It has to be produced somewhere.
South Dakota Farm Family of the Month out of Kimball. Luke, you back with me?
I'm with you, Bill.
We have a guy that is the executive director of South Dakota Stock Growers. We got about 3 minutes or so. Do you want to talk to James Halverson?
Yeah, James, welcome. James, executive director of South Dakota Stock Growers, and they just wrapped up their annual convention. James, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate having me.
How you finished up your convention out there, heading into 2021. What was the feel of the convention?
Well, I think it was a really great convention. I think people were just excited to actually go and have something face-to-face and meet and greet and shake hands with their friends and neighbors. Of course, we had some social distancing and some hand sanitizer and all those types of things, but I think people were really happy to just get out and know that the world is going to go on, and we had a great convention with a lot of people attending.
And I apologize I couldn't make it out there, but I do know that you had some representatives from our congressional delegation speaking there, too. Can you kind of hit on that for us?
Sure. We've worked really hard to develop our partnerships and relationships with our D.C. delegation. So we had, the top ag liaisons for each of them out there. We had Ryan Donnelly with Senator Thune's office. We had John Weber with Congressman Johnson's office. And we had Logan Penfield with Senator Round's office there. So we did a little discussion with them, let them update the membership on all the different things that are going on in D.C. and have had a really good discussion with them. So it was really nice for them to be able to explain to us a little bit of what they've got going on moving forward and try to pick our brains on things that we think are important and things that they should be working on as we wrap up this year and into the next legislative session.
James, any talk on the current situation in the cattle industry, with potential price gouging, imports, exports, our trade situations that's going on? Were there any discussions there?
Not as many discussions on trade. A lot of the discussions focused on the markets, things we can do to try to improve those markets. As you know, there's several bills that are out there being suggested right now. It's probably not looking like many of those are going to be moving very fast in the next month or two. And then there was also good discussion on the meat processing and that side of things and how that's sort of a choke point in the whole production system. And it was, if there's anything good that come out of the pandemic, it was that more and more people began to realize, just like you were talking earlier, on the production cycle, that, food doesn't just come from the grocery stores. It doesn't just magically appear there. There's a lot of things that go on before that point. So it highlighted where some of those choke points are and how we need to build a more resilient and robust system. And we're trying to work through those issues on the state and a national level.
Well, James, we definitely appreciate all the work that Stock Growers does for South Dakota. Definitely an important issue, making sure that our ranchers can still continue to go out there and produce world-class beef. I think it's real important, and I know as your organization does, and it's just nice that, two organizations can still be on the same page, and kind of like we had talked about earlier in our show, I think unity and moving forward is the key to, getting, common goals accomplished. Would you agree?
Well, I absolutely agree. Amongst all of our groups and even within our groups, there's a lot of diversity in thought and opinion and where we can go on different things. But there's also a lot of places where we agree, and we need to look at those places where we agree and really try to make some movement and influence policy in the right direction. Because if we just sit here as commodity groups and yell at each other and point out the differences, the people on the outside really just don't think we have our stuff together and really are going to tune us out and not pay much attention. But if we can focus on some of those areas where we can come together like we've done with you guys, I think we can affect positive change. And our industry obviously needs that right now.
I think you nailed it right on the head there, James. We couldn't agree more that, unity and moving forward to protect our way of life. Our ranchers are, the number one economic source in South Dakota, is production, egg production. So, it's an honor that we can work with other groups such as yourselves to strive forward for our family farmers and ranchers.
Well, and I think, again, just every once in a while, consumers and all of us need to be reminded of things that are important. And then we, as human, you know, human nature, we start to take things for granted. And all of a sudden, when there was a little bit of a scare here a few months ago, people started to look back and appreciate farmers and ranchers a little bit more. So I think that we've got some momentum on our side to get some things done and to help affect positive change. And I hope that we can continue to do that.
James, we appreciate you. We're going to take a break. We got to get back. We have this senator that's waiting for us in D.C. He might have something he wants to tell us this morning, James. What do you think?
Well, who knows? We'll see.
The day begins. Morning colors in the east. Neighborhoods awaken. Sounds of life. A car. Walking a pet. Neighbors awake. High above a cloudless sky, or maybe a churning gray. A stiff breeze. Or still, the community begins their work. It's a work of caring, of finance, of health, of home, churches, parks, and flowing water. Breaking bread with friends and families, trust, prayers, smiles, hope. The day ends, evening colors in the west. Neighborhoods sleep safely. Isn't it great to live in South Dakota? A poem of reality from the Tony Bachman Group, the trusted name in real estate.
Rush Limbaugh, weekdays 11 to 2. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
Senator Mike Rounds, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How you doing this morning?
Well, you were a little busy. You were our lead act this morning, so we had to put you in the finale. How's that?
That's great. No, we just came out of our leadership elections in the Senate. Based on, you know, we still got to win Georgia. But right now, it's we're optimistic. So we've reelected our leadership team, and I think everybody probably is hoping for it. I think they now know that John Thune has been reelected as our majority whip, and Mitch McConnell will be our leader once again. But we went right on down the line, and it was a good set of elections, and now we've got to follow through. We've got a lot of work to do between now and the end of the year, and a lot of decisions to be made yet. But most certainly there's opportunities for us to make some improvements with regard to ag in the remaining part of this year and into next year.
All right. Question South Dakota Farmers Union wants me to ask you this morning. To support democracy, we kind of believe here that you should encourage the president to concede, perhaps more important, cooperate with that transfer of power. Where are we?
You know, I think this will play out the way the founding fathers envisioned it in the first place. And first of all, within this process, everybody has to understand and follow and believe in the outcome of the election. We've got a court system in place whenever there is a question that we all rely on. And so I think part of what we've tried to share is that if the president has concerns about the election or about the process and so forth, he has every legal right to make the challenges. But that works its way through the process. It won't take long to do that. And most certainly, he really owes it to his followers that if he truly believes that there were problems with the election, that he should follow that up. But the courts will make a determination. It won't take long to get that done. There will be a recognition that the elections that we have are once again sound, and we'll move forward. But he has, you know, if you were a really strong supporter of President Trump and you put your heart and soul into his reelection, you most certainly wanted to make sure that the election was done. And if there's any question about it, the courts are there to answer. As a matter of fact, I some people have criticized Attorney General Barr because he said, look, for U.S. attorneys, that they could follow up with investigations. I think that will expedite this process because as they look through each of those states, they may very well decide very quickly either there is or there is not a reason to pursue it. And I think that will also expedite this process one way or the other. So The president has every right, and his followers, he owes it to his followers, so that when he's all done with this thing, one way or the other, he can look back and say, we followed it through, the founding fathers laid this process out, we followed it, and now we move forward. And I think as that happens, you will find if the president is not successful in his reelection, then we all stand ready to support the new president. If he, at the same time, most of the focus here within our conference has been on Georgia and the two seats that are down there, and the fact that for many of us, this is a huge, huge opportunity to continue forward with what we believe to be good policy for the upper Midwest. So we're really focused on maintaining and working very hard to pick up those two Georgia Senate seats. And well, I'll tell you what, if we don't want Waters of the U.S. to come back to haunt us and the Green New Deal to come back to haunt us, we're just convinced we've got to win those two Georgia seats one way or the other.
Luke, a question for the senator.
Senator Rounds, first off, congratulations on your second term being reelected. Great honor. Did have a question for you, and it's kind of a change of topic here, but the Beef Integrity Act, I know that had a lot of popularity. Where are we sitting with it right now, Senator Rounds?
We've got a number of these acts right now that we are working on. And part of this is we're not going to lose our push on any one of these separate bills that we're working on. We can't just stop on one bill, but in each particular case, what we're trying to do is to bring attention to the fact that there is complacency in Washington, D.C. with all of these different proposals, whether it's mandatory country of origin labeling, whether it's the Beef Integrity Act, whether it's the transparency when we talk about like what right now trying to get transparency in the marketplace with Chuck's bill working its way through right now. But here's the deal. All of these separate items, when you go back in, you have to have 60 votes to get out of the Senate. It was amazing that when I asked for unanimous consent to move forward with this, the folks that came back to the chairman of our Ag Committee with opposition to these things are still the insiders in Washington, D.C. These are the associations that you would think would be trying to help our producers. And in each particular case, what we're finding is that there is an ingrained group of people here in Washington, D.C. that really do like the status quo. And they're not interested in seeing any of the separate items that we have come to fruition. And I mean, this is frustrating because you'd think that in many cases, the insiders in D.C. would recognize that they really do have to deliver for these producers that they propose or that they suggest that they have such an interest in helping. But the bottom line is that we find opposition in the vast majority of the changes that we want to make, whether it's mandatory country of origin labeling, whether it's the Beef Integrity Act, you name it, all of them have the same thing, and that is there's folks here that have a vested interest in not getting success because then they're still the ones that go back home and tell everybody how hard they're fighting to try to change this stuff, but they're out of a job if they ever get it done. And that is the frustrating part of this when you talk about an ingrained group of people here in D.C., and we just got to keep fighting it. And I'm convinced that as we move forward, it's kind of like when we went to the Department of Justice and we asked them back in March to do a review and a look at whether or not the different packers, whether or not there had been any kind of collusion. I got four people, including myself, on my first letter. A month and a half later, we had 18 people that were supporting us. We've just got to continue to push that forward. And right now, this is on a bipartisan basis. We've got different bills, each of which, in order to have any chance of success, has got to have Republicans and Democrats supporting it. And that's what we're doing is building those coalitions.
All right, 1 minute left. Healthcare, very important to those in the rural areas. What can we do to help them?
Well, number one, with regard to healthcare, I am convinced that if we can get these back to where we don't take away the protections that you find so many people associate with Obamacare, such as protection against pre-existing conditions and so forth, But what we need to do is to get it back so we can actually manage it on a state-by-state basis. And I'm convinced that we continue to keep provisions out there that, but still allow for the individual states to more efficiently deliver it. We've shown that under the proposal that we lost by one vote in the United States Senate, it would be reducing costs of health care by 40%, and you would not be losing the protections that so many of us need. And I'm just sharing with you, we're not going to lose protections against pre-existing conditions. But right now, we've got to find a more efficient way, and a one-size-fits-all in health care does not work.
Senator Mike Rounds, appreciate you. Appreciate you weighing in. Keep us in mind in D.C.
Absolutely will do. And look, stay in touch. We've got a path forward on making changes for producers in rural America. It's got to be bipartisan. We're making headway.
All right. Thank you very much. Last thing we're going to talk about this morning is weather. Going from some snow outside to maybe warmer weather next week. I hate to look ahead, Scott, but, you know, snow in November, I guess it's supposed to happen.
Oh, it is. You know, we average around 7 inches of snow in Sioux Falls for the month of November. So, yeah, this is not uncommon at all. We're getting some snow today. I think by the end of the day, it may end up being around 4 inches. We'll continue to watch. The totals add up. But, yeah, we have snow expanding from southeastern South Dakota and around Yankton to the northeast, getting close to Watertown. We'll be getting some light snow showers here on as well. But I think eastern, southeastern South Dakota, Minnesota, and Iowa will get heavier snows. In fact, some of the amounts may come in over 6 inches for northwestern Iowa and southwestern Minnesota. Again, Sioux Falls may end up being around 4. But once this passes, and I think it is a fast mover, so it won't last long, meaning by late this evening, I think a lot of this will be done. And by tomorrow, yeah, it will be a cold day. You know, temperatures will be colder where we have that fresh snowpack. Numbers probably middle, upper 30s. But, you know, we'll have sunshine, western, central, northern South Dakota, where temperatures there should warm to the middle, maybe even the upper 40s, depending on how much snow cover they have. So snow really plays a role in how warm we get this time of year.
You always come very close on the amount of inches of snow that we'll have this year. And last year you did well. So what are you thinking for 2020, 2021?
Oh, here it comes.
What's that? What's here comes what?
The amount of snow.
Yeah. The expert.
I'm not at liberty to say yet. That will come out on Monday.
Oh, okay.
Numbers together. But on Monday during our winter special at 6:30 is when I come out with the snowfall prediction. And, yeah, last year I was within 3. You know, that snow that came on Easter, it set a record. I think we ended up around 6 inches of snowfall then. And, you know, going into that weekend, I was thinking, man, I'm sitting pretty. And then it just kept snowing and snowing snowing and snowing. Like, you got to be kidding me. So, but we'll see how we do this year. We are under the influence of La Nina, and, you know, which typically means a little colder than average. And, you know, anytime you look at either an El Nino or a La Nina type of winter, the snow can vary. You know, some are, you know, high in the snow end total, some are very low. And when I was doing some of the research earlier, I found out that, you know, some winters during La Nina, we had 70 plus inches of snow, and other winters we had snow in the 20s. So there can be a big variance as to how much snowfall we get.
All right, best we can do. I appreciate you, and I hope you are over predicting and we'll get a little less. That would work.
All thanks. Right, I'll try my best for you. Okay?
Thanks,
put your order in now.
All right, Luke, thanks for what you did. You got to Mitchell. You can go back north.
Bill, thank you, and I just want to say really quick on behalf of South Dakota Farmers Union, happy Veterans Day tomorrow to everyone, and we thank you for your service.
I'm Bill Zortman with Luke Rendell for all 20,000 members of South Dakota Farmers Union. Our time is up. We thank you for yours.
Talk 1320.